You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. Liverpool gather their first trophy of Jurgen Klopp's farewell tour after Virgil van Dijk delivers a super header in extra time to ace Chelsea 1-0 in the Carabao Cup final. Arsenal pick up right where they left off in the Premier League and breeze past Newcastle in a convincing 4-1 win. Manchester City need just the one Phil Foden goal to keep Bournemouth at arm's length and stay in touch of the league leaders. And Manchester United look lost without Rasmus Højlund in attack and give up a late winner in injury time to Fulham. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode.
Okay, my friend, we'll go to Wembley. We've just seen the conclusion of Liverpool taking on Chelsea, a game that had lots of talking points, lots of things to hit on. But it is Liverpool who win. It's another piece of silverware for Jurgen Klopp, the first of four that they're chasing, so one in the bag, three to go. Give me some of your takeaways, Rob. Some big picture before we go into detail.
There's a lot, Rob, isn't there? There's a lot. I just felt like I've just watched three games in one. I mean, it seemed like the longest, you know, game forever. So many incidents, so many chances, so many, well, it's disallowed goals. We had both teams hit the post. Mm-hmm. Both goalkeepers were outstanding, by the way. And it was an amazing game. And, you know, we just finished watching it. And it's kind of, it's very easy, Rob, to cut to extra time, right? And we'll get to some of the details and stuff. But the difference here. And by the way, my overriding thought of this game, if I had a day to step out and take a breath on it was, there was nothing in this game. There was nothing in the game. Both teams had brilliant chances to score goals. They should have scored goals, both sides. Both goalkeepers made incredible saves, but still, particularly Chelsea with an early one with Cole Palmer, Kelleher makes an incredible save. So it was a tight game. We all know that Liverpool had a ton of injuries, young players in the starting lineup, but it towards the end of the 90 minutes, Rob, it looked like Liverpool were wilting. Chelsea came strong again when they looked like they were going to be the team to go on, and something happened. Those subs that came on for Liverpool, Rob, those young players that we'll mention a little later in this chat, really, and what the manager must have said at the end of 90 minutes going into extra time that took this football club to the top of them steps, picking up the trophy, and the team that didn't. And there's a lot of little nuanced differences there, but a sign of a manager that's just got that magic, whatever it is, sparkle, dust, whatever he says to those players, whether they're experienced players or whether they're young players, he somehow found a way for that club to go again, Rob, and that team to go again in extra time and force that goal with Virgil van Dijk. I mean, also van Dijk's kind of game as well was pretty spectacular, and for him to score the winning goal, you can see what it meant to him and the players and the fans. And you know, you see the scenes at the end there, Rob, which is, you know, probably the image that we've just switched off our TVs and come away with is you'll never walk alone, with the whole club, with Jurgen Klopp in the middle there in front of the fans singing that for them. It is a special club. It's been a special experience under Jurgen Klopp, and he's the first part of the four. He's in these four tournaments. They've won the League Cup, Rob, and there was something special at the end there, an extra time that Liverpool could draw on that Chelsea couldn't.
I think you make some great points, and you're right. And I think drawing on what you say was the difference, and it, some of it's footballing, some of it's mindset, some of it's belief and drive and all those things. I think it's something that Liverpool can draw on now and can help them, Rob, through now to the end of the season. This trophy had more importance to both of these clubs than probably normal circumstances. For Chelsea to have won, Pochettino, his first trophy since the Abramovich era, the Todd Boehly era, would have been a starting point to grow the football club. We'll get to Chelsea in a minute. For Liverpool, Rob, and I go back to, I think it's 2016 I go back to, he lost a League Cup final, Jurgen Klopp, and there was talk about, you know, is he the guy who can't get them quite over the line?
Mm.
8 years on, Rob, I thought today stood for all the things that Jurgen Klopp has brought to this football club. Despite who's playing, despite who's missing, despite who's... what the score is, despite whether we're on top of the game or not, we have a will, we have a culture, we have a never-say-die attitude that's going to get us over the line, mate. And I thought it showed through the club today. It was a victory for everybody who's associated to Liverpool, whether you're an academy director who's worked with one of those kids, whether you're a scout who's brought in the Virgil van Dijks of the world, the top end, or the local lads who've come in. I just thought it was a club victory today for Liverpool. And a massive statement to what Jurgen Klopp has done and bought to the club, and actually, Rob, what they miss when he's going to leave.
Let's stick with Liverpool, Rob, and sort of talk about a few standouts for them as we kind of dissect this final a little bit. And I think players that deserve a mention. I think, you know, Endo I thought he had a sound game in midfield, a player that started a little bit shaky at Liverpool, but it's become a more important part of it. I think he, out of the midfield players, Liverpool was probably the pick. When you look at the front line, so different to what you might expect to see from Liverpool in terms of their best players. Andy Robertson looking like he's back at his normal self at left back. I mean, Conor Bradley, the right fullback, Rob, that ended up playing higher up, didn't he, in the game when Gomez came in to right side. I'll go straight to my underappreciated performer, Rob, because it does come in this game. And, you know, I know there's Premier League games we'll get to as well, and there's some other incidents, but and maybe he is appreciated more than maybe what I think, but Quirin Kelleher, the second choice Liverpool goalkeeper, that's played maybe 5 Premier League games last year, maybe a similar amount last year. He hasn't played a lot of big first team games. He's been in the cup. I think he's played like 5 in Europa, 5 in the League Cup or whatever. So he's the second choice guy.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that he looks like a very, very high level goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. Forget about who he's behind. He's, of course, behind one of the best in the world in Alisson. But they have got another tremendous goalkeeper, Rob, in all aspects. We've mentioned him, I think, in the past and other games where he stepped in and did a great job. The save to Cole Palmer, where he's instinctively guessed, really, but he's had to throw his arm in the position. He's so close to Palmer, he's had to guess where to throw his arm. Makes a brilliant save. And other saves later in the game to Conor Gallagher, I think late in the game, I remember as well. This kid is amazing. Mm. I think he's mid-20s.
25.
He's got a huge career ahead of him. Yeah, so you got other clubs that, you know, those that might need a goalkeeper. That experience for him today, I'm so pleased for him, because it's not easy to be, even though he's fairly young as a goalkeeper at 25, to keep sitting on the bench behind, you know, an outstanding goalkeeper at Liverpool. I think he is miles better than what you might expect for a second choice goalie. And Kelleher today showed that everybody is, between his mentality, demeanour, confidence, his mental state, Rob. He ain't jumping around. He's not one of them. He's pretty cold, pretty calm goalkeeper, but capable of making good saves. Had tons to do with his feet as well. Never made any mistakes. I think he's a really top class goalkeeper already.
It's a brilliant shout, mate. Absolutely brilliant shout, because again, just before midweek, I was doing the Liverpool Luton game, and you know, you do your little notes and that. And I wrote with Kelleher, who's in, obviously, because Alisson's picked up some muscle injuries, which is a little bit frustrating, I'm sure, for Jurgen Klopp, is I wrote down, Rob, worry-free number 2. Play him and they're in worry. You know, some number 2s come in and you think, oh, gosh, you know, can't wait to get the number 1 goalkeeper back in the sticks, because it all doesn't look quite the same. He looks confident, Rob. He's not dramatic. He's got a nice, cool poise and presence about him. He's got the confidence of his teammates. They play back to him, Rob. When his shots go in, they know he'll hold on to him. I think it's a brilliant shout. Let me pose you a question then on Keller. Well, first of all, is there a worry that he might become a target for somebody who might want to put him as his number one, and might at some point he want to do that? And the second sort of second part of the question, Rob, is, doesn't this also lend again to the management of Klopp? Because even if Alisson was fit, wouldn't Kelleher have played? Hasn't he often played Kelleher in these kind of games to make sure he's on top of the games. And I think, Rob, not just to play, but to feel part of the group.
Yeah, I think he would have played, Rob. I think he has played many games. You know, I haven't got the data in front of me right now. I think he's played quite a bit of it. It makes sense, doesn't it, to play? If somebody as good as him, he needs to play games because the less games he plays, the more chance of him getting away. And it is a concern, Rob, isn't it? Because now after a game like this, just put yourself in his shoes, right? His shoes. Now, I'm not sure how long Alisson's going to be out, so this isn't going to be immediate. But can you imagine the next time that Gallagher jumps out the side? Alisson's back, he's fit, he's playing well. Kevin Kelleher's on the bench, and he remembers back to a day like today and what it means to be in the first team when you win games and you win trophies. And I don't know. It's impossible for us to know how satisfied he is with the status quo about being number two goalkeeper. It's not as though Alisson's like reaching the end of his career, Rob, is it? I mean, he's still got a long way to go. And so I just don't know how satisfied he's going to be. I mean, it is a special club and he's had plenty of minutes under Liverpool. But listen, that's something we'll see. I just want to give him a shout out today, Rob, for somebody that should be regarded as being one of the best in the Premier League, even though he's a number two. That's all I wanted to say on that.
Yeah, one other person I want to mention, mate, and I think you mentioned him in the top. I think the captain today deserves a mention, Virgil van Dijk, by the way.
Yeah.
The goal he scores that gets ruled out correctly, I have to say, for the VAR call. Great work by VAR. Yeah. We give it criticism, but he picked up on that. The header that he scores, I think the way he plays. Rob, you know, there's been some criticism after the injury. Is he the same player? You know, is he still the best of class in there? I think his attitude, I think he started, Rob, he's played with Konate, he's played with Gomez, he's played with Matip, he's played with Kwanzaa. They all have fitted in next to him. He looks like he's enjoying the responsibility now and has driven with Klopp and obviously got a great relationship with Jurgen Klopp, has driven for these trophies to make sure his manager goes off in the right way. I thought he was outstanding today and not just the player, because I think we all know he's a bit of a Rolls Royce and he can do it. But I thought the personality and the character, and when I look at Chelsea, and we look at Chelsea, how they could do with a Virgil van Dijk in that group, how they could do with somebody of that stature, Rob, who can, you know, when they were on top and the game was theirs to be won, pushes them on and goes and they go and win it. That's where what Chelsea were missing, I thought, today, and was part of the difference in the two teams.
Just go back to the this disallowed goal, Rob, because the amount of crazy feedback that I get on social media when I post saying that it was a good call. I mean, I wish people would just check the FIFA laws. They're out there online. You just tap in there, you Google FIFA laws of the game, 23, 24, get the current, go down to law 11 offside, and it's in the text right there. You know, if you're in an offside position and there's no question, Endo is offside when the ball is played, so he's an offside position, and then he inhibits a player or restricts a player that could have challenged for the ball, then he's interfering with play. And in the past, you know, maybe these aren't picked up so much. Yeah, that's probably true in people's frustrations. But that it kind of, you know, sometimes when VAR makes kind of quick, it was kind of right over to the side. It's a subjective one because, you know, there's a little bit of a pit. It wasn't a black and white, he's offside. Yeah. It was he interfering with play? Yeah. And that's when they go to because they're called the subjective ones. So there's like sometimes a little bit of grey in that, you know, with an offside, is he interfering with play or not? That's when they go over. And he was pretty quick. And again, if you read down the text there, it kind of explains all that. So that was, but I mean, both teams hit the post. I mean, it was an amazing game of football, Rob. It started off a bit shaky. I thought both teams looked nervous. I thought Chelsea looked particularly nervous, Rob. If you want to jump onto them now with the way that they played out, I thought Levi Colwill looked really shaky.
Overran a ball a couple of times, really, didn't he? And then got caught in possession a little bit.
Passing was off, and they looked a little nervous. But I mean, it could have gone their way. Yeah. It could have gone Chelsea's way. I don't think this is a one-way conversation, Rob. It shouldn't be for us to have how great Liverpool are and how crappy Chelsea are. They can't get over the line and win. That's something of it. But this could have been very different. Mm. And yes, of course, I know you've got to take your chances. But in another day, you might expect them to score at least one goal there. Yeah. You know, they got a little bit fraction offside with Sterling's goal that he scored that was just offside. It was a very tight game. Two teams that was strangely kind of little off colour, but still created and almost scored a million. I mean, so many goals in the game. So it will be a blow. And I think the headline probably will be, Rob, that we went to at the start of this conversation, that Klopp found a way and Poch didn't. I mean, that's probably going to be the headline here. But it was
it'll
a tight game.
Be the narrative,
yeah, it was tight.
You know, Conor Gallagher alone could have had a hat trick today, Rob. Finishing was just off, didn't make some right decisions. They got in a good space.
Yeah, hit the post.
It's a post with a nice one that you know that beats Kelleher and comes out. And, you know, just didn't seem to be their day. But, you know, the headlines, the narratives, the criticism's going to come on the club. And Pochettino, Rob, you know, people are going to talk about hasn't won a trophy. People are going to talk about this Chelsea team bottling it. I think we're hearing and stuff like that, that it, you know, couldn't stand up to Liverpool's kids. Is the next step now important for Pochettino from now to the end of the season? Feels like an important 12 or 13 games, Rob.
Yeah, they've improved, Rob, haven't they? Mm. They have improved. Mm-hmm. And that's why, before this game kicks off, just before, I thought, you know what? I fancy Chelsea to win this in a tight game. I think they've been better. I think they've understood about Shapen being working harder for the team. I think they're all working a little harder now. I think the midfield kind of triangle, if you like, and Gallagher, Enzo and Caicedo, it looks really, really strong. I really like Malo Gusto at right back, though I thought he had a shaky game today. Listen, I've been there in a final, and it's bloody nerve-wracking. You know, all your family's there. It's a cup final. Don't want to make a mistake. And I just thought a couple of their players were a little off it. So they're improving, Rob, and this shouldn't be too much of a blow for them. Of course, it's Pochettino's job to kind of lift their heads up and get cracking again. But no, I mean it's just the difference there. And those kids, we should mention them, Rob: Jaden Downs, Bobby Clark, and James McConnell. Apart from the Connor Bradleys that was outstanding in the game, and Kevin Kelleher that we talked about. I mean that's well done for the Liverpool Academy to bring those young players in to be able to make an impact in a cup final. I mean that will end up being a story in extra time how those kids came on and were not phased. And compared to the Chelsea subs, you had Mudryk come into the game. And Madueke come in, had little and Kukuzwa and little flashes, and yet they lost it. Chelsea lost somehow. They lost their way in extra time. And Virgil van Dijk, I mean, he gave him a warning earlier with the goal that was offside with Endo. I mean, he is a powerhouse and a Premier League and Liverpool legend, really, isn't he, Virgil van Dijk? Rob,
he's getting to the point,
way he carries himself. He's a proper top player in this league.
Just going back on the point, and I was just making a point with these young players, Rob, and it's like, it's not just their ability. We've all grown up with talented players and seen players, but it's almost like the confidence that they play with, Rob. They're happy to accept the ball. They'll take it under pressure. They play out from the back. They don't just, you know, at times, I remember when I was a kid getting into the first team, the first thing I want to do is just pass the ball, keep it safe and move on. These kids, and I'm not sure...
It's different, Rob, isn't it now?
It is different, and the academies train them. And I'm just saying it's a credit to all the academies out there and all the academy coaches who we don't know often, we don't see, they don't often get a pat on the back. Mm. But how sort of fitting it must be for an academy coach who might not even be at the game, but watch some of these kids who they've had at U7s, U8s, U9s, and then we're seeing them in a first-team picture at whatever, 17, 18, 19 years of age, and be comfortable, Rob. It does augur well for English football when you see these kids coming in and the kind of confidence with which they play.
Yeah, it's well said, and I think you're seeing it from a lot of clubs in England now. I think our academy system now, and the way that the Premier League teams have had the money to invest over the last decade, are really starting to, you know, I think we're seeing that in the national team with England, national team with the young players coming through and being really strong, for the most part, being developed at Premier League clubs. And then when you look in the stands, Rob, when you see Mo Salah and Szoboszlai and Van... Trent Alexander-Arnold and everybody else that isn't fit. Yeah, they're all there. It was like four or five of them in a line. It's like, this club, it's just goes back to Jurgen Klopp's kind of decision to move out right now.
It's a great job for somebody, isn't it? It's waiting for somebody, isn't it?
It's a great job for somebody. Yeah. And I mean, just finally on this, Rob, and Jurgen Klopp, that's the seventh trophy, I think, now with Liverpool.
Yeah.
And you're definitely seeing him more animated, sure, taking it in, yeah, enjoying yeah. it more, running to different sides of Anfield, running to the, you know, being right in the centre of the trophy yeah. there when they both lift up together. So you're seeing the Klopp effect. I mean, we got weeks yet, mate, and we shouldn't get into this yet about Jurgen Klopp. No. But I mean, I was thinking the other day, you know, Rob, if you had to mold, right, if you had a flipping AI bloody robot for a Premier League manager and all the things that you might want from that person in terms of personality, strength, tactical smarts, being understanding with players, arm around the shoulder, being confident in interviews. I mean, he is, I guess maybe you want him to be English. Maybe you're going to be wanting to come from your area of England, I suppose. But other than that, he ticks, I mean, Pep's incredible, right?
Yeah.
But in different ways, Rob, Pep doesn't sort of tick every box that Klopp does.
And this isn't not a criticism, but an observation. Pep's less warm than Klopp. Klopp's warmer, yeah. Rob.
Less connecting with the fans.
Yeah, more connected.
Doesn't connect with the fans so much.
Yeah. It's a good point, though, and I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah. There's a tick list of listen, when Liverpool got him robbed from Dortmund, I don't think they quite understood or realised just how big a personality and how good this guy was. And he's shown over the 8 years that he does tick a lot of the boxes and he's going to be big shoes to fill. We've got an exciting last 2-3 months of the season. I heard somebody talking about it this week, a journalist or something, and said, Jurgen Klopp understands about this next 2 or 3 months. And he's almost like, he's a bit of a showman. And I think he knows that the cameras are going to be on him and he's going to give us stuff. And he's emotional, Rob. He wears his heart on his sleeve. Another thing that I think we like about him, maybe that Pep doesn't do it in quite the same way. So, we should savour it. We should remember him. We should celebrate him because he's going to be a miss when he goes. But there's still plenty of football to go and 3 more trophies for Liverpool to go for.
Hey Rob, just final point. I mean, if you think about it, right, as him, right, this is like he's playing the last 10 minutes of his football career.
Yeah,
he's
going
to give it everything.
Yeah,
he's absolutely going to be all the energy to put into these last 2 or 3 months to try and achieve things for this club as he walks away. But knowing he's going to walk away, he must be thinking, right, everything I'm going to give into this. You know, my family, I'm not going to see you much. I'm going to give everything, knowing that the break is coming. And I think that's going to help Liverpool. They're sat top of the league table. They've just won the League Cup. They're in everything else. It was a great end up being a good watch today, mate. It was long. There's lots of things going on. Not a ton of goals, obviously, but Matt, that was some kind of sign of character at the end for them to come through and win. So well done, Liverpool, and commiserations, Chelsea. Not far away, but not quite good enough today.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best nut sound you've ever heard.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99 at participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
Let's move it to the Premier League, mate, because we've got a race, my friend. We have a 3-horse race, and I'm going to take you straight to the Emirates, to Arsenal, hosting Newcastle. Remember the reverse fixture? The Anthony Gordon goal, the possible red cards for Havertz and Bruno Guimaraes, a bit of fallout on the touchline. Well, there was many who thought, interesting game for Arsenal, could be a bit of banana skin, Newcastle coming back, Isak back in the team, and a bit of bad blood between the two. I'm afraid, mate, from Newcastle's point of view, nothing of the sort. It was a 4-1 scoreline that I said on it, I thought flattered Newcastle. Arsenal were outstanding in the first 45 minutes. Newcastle didn't have a shot, not one shot in the first 45 minutes. As good as I've seen Arsenal, Robin, they've been pretty good since the turn of the year. As good as I'd seen them in the first half, and they got the goal second half once the third goal went in. It was a bit of a clinic, to be honest, from Mikel Arteta's man.
I just thought it was. I thought that Arsenal were almost perfect for 45 minutes that first half. That's about as complete a performance as they could ever hope for. And what I would say as well, that as well, I've made a note, Rob, of that, like, that felt like the perfect modern. That's a modern Premier League first half in terms of what everybody's trying to do in the Premier League right now, in terms of the playing out, in terms of the crazy high press, the floating players, the interchanging, the everything that's trendy and cool nowadays, from false nines to half spaces to full press and all this stuff that we all talk about. I thought Arsenal did it perfectly. And I don't know what's happened, Rob, since the turn of the year to Arsenal, because this is different. And this is different in terms of, like, I don't know, they've grown somehow. This kind of energy, and maybe it's from maturing and experience and Declan Rice that drives the team, but there's something tougher, stronger, more aggressive in the team, the way that they play. They've still got the football, and maybe the football at times this season, Rob, hasn't been quite as really pretty as it was last year, but the prettiness has been replaced by a steely, aggressive, physical nature that I haven't seen. And they were absolutely all over Newcastle, Rob. Newcastle couldn't put two passes together because of the energy and the pressing. I thought, that's impressive. And when you said there that we got a race, we've got a race. That doesn't look like that's going anywhere for Arsenal. And we know about last year and some key injuries. If the kind of the spine of that team remains in place, then they look in good shape. And whilst I'm on a roll, Rob, I am going to go onto a guy that you mentioned me on the air, and Kai Havertz. Now, in terms of something's changed in this team, something's changed in Havertz. And I, in the last two or three weeks, and I'll tell you what's changed, is that he now has become an aggressive, physical, hard-working number nine. Now, that is, if, like, you know, he's probably, you know, whether it's him or his manager, you know, the number eight or the number 10, the fancy kind of footballer getting in the box scoring goals, hasn't quite worked. And it's not as much as reinventing himself, but I think he's thought, how can I really be effective? And and he's gone with with work and with physicality and closing. I mean, fans love that stuff. I mean, I made a career out of it, Rob. I wasn't a technical player. I charged around, I tackled, I closed, and I worked my socks off to be favoured, to be useful for the team. Now, you know, he got his goal, and it's amazing how good things happen when you have that mentality to run around to close down. Now, you know, is it just me? Like, it's not just that Kai Havertz has come good. He's come good in an unexpected way of the way that he's been effective for the team, and long may that continue, because that's useful for Arsenal Football Club more than the little in and out games guy in as a number eight or whatever that now seems to be fired up, aggressive and scary. I mean, he's 6'4" and he's a big guy and he's starting to use it and love it. Yeah, I love it.
I mean, it's a good point, and we did sort of have a little bit of a joke saying, you know, that, you know, you're in or you're out, and must be for a long time was out, and it was just a point we'll make. Well, the interesting, and you've given me an extra thought to what I was thinking. Maybe, Rob, sometimes, and I used to find, I was an attacking midfield player, right, and sometimes, now and then, depending on the game, the manager would say to me, like, you know, go and play right next to the centre forward, and sometimes I didn't really like that, because it didn't... I like my role clarified. I like to know, you know, the detail of what I got. I'm just wondering if you know, as an eight, and when I look at Odegaard, I don't think Mikel Arteta personally coaches Martin Odegaard to do some of the things he does. I think Odegaard gets him them spaces, and he naturally will play a certain way.
Yeah.
I just wonder if Kai Havertz isn't that guy who gets in those spaces and naturally knows. But the clarification of his role as a false nine is a lot more... determined, it's a lot more succinct. And you, and as you said, and I did a little piece on him at the weekend, I think he gives Arsenal a different option. He's got size. He's got physicality. I think he's got a good football IQ where he knows it, where he can drift into centre-backs and draw them out, or he can play on the shoulder a little bit and pin people back. I just think that he's kind of feels like, he looks to me like he feels more comfortable in the new role, and there's more clarity to this new role than maybe as an 8 or a 10 where he's a bit in between, and I don't think it naturally fits his game.
It looks like Robbie is if he said to himself, right, I want to make myself a flipping permanent fixture.
Yeah, you know, yeah. How am I going to play in this team?
You know, yeah. How am I going to do it? Now, all I would say is, of course, he got his goal, right? Mm. He got his goal in the first half, and well done. Yeah. He makes a run, and it ends up beautiful ball back from Martinelli. Well done. I still got to say that physicality and aggression and work ethic on its own isn't going to be enough. But the goals are starting to come, Rob. If he can add...
He missed an easy one. 2-0, didn't he? Which changes the game, which is part of the reason he gets a bit of criticism. Yeah. And you're right. But yeah, he's got to produce. But he's got 5 goals now, hasn't he? Is that 5 goals for the season, I think? Yeah?
I think he has, yeah.
Yeah, 5 or 6 goals now.
Listen, he's not, you know, it's not all finished and done and dusted, and he's a great signing
Premier League
for them.
Goals, sorry, mate, just to be sure.
Six Premier League goals. So that's a long time in the first half of the season. He got very few. Remember, they gave him the penalty, didn't they, to get his first Premier League goal? So it's just, listen, I'll always give credit where credit's due. And if it means it goes against what I believe from earlier on, absolutely no problem with that. And I wanted to give him credit, given how he's, not just this game, by the way, the last 2 or 3 games, he's been like a bit of a man possessed. And it's like, I don't mind that. Like, that's affecting the game. What you don't want is a player that's in and out and the game's passing you by, which we all got to us when we were playing Robin. Yeah. And coaches said, don't let the game pass you by somehow. And he's just doing it. Listen, that's goals. That's tons of goals from Arsenal as well, from different parts of the team.
Set pieces
from
again, mate, as well. Two goals mention them again. Set pieces. I know.
Yeah, no, absolutely right, Robert. And... wow, it's exciting for Arsenal fans because, like, I think it was like December, Rob, wasn't it? They went flat a little bit, and it's they've gone off a little bit. But since January, I think it was. I kind of look back at the results since January, the turn of the year.
It's a Liverpool
game.
They
have got some
loss to Liverpool, and then they've flown.
That's it, and a cup, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so. Wow, I enjoyed the game. Newcastle had no answers for it. You know, I'm pleased for Joe Willock to come back and get a goal. He's been injured forever, nice, it seems like. And they're getting some players back. Harvey Barnes is back. But this wasn't about Newcastle, I'm afraid. And maybe other days will be, and other podcasts will be. This was about a performance. And this isn't against a Burnley. This is against Newcastle United that can dig a little bit and have got strong defenders. So if Arsenal, and I hope that, and they've done it in different ways. Yeah, the Liverpool game was I can't remember the specifics now, was a heavy metal, then they had an intricate, thoughtful win. This one's a little bit in between. The manager is getting, he's getting the right notes in different matches right now, doesn't he?
Yeah. I mean, listen, we've got 12 games to go and we might get to the end of March and April and things don't look as good. But I saw an interesting article yesterday, Rob, which said, like, the Arteta from that day in Newcastle when I thought it was a foul and the goal wasn't given, but the disgrace, the letting himself go. There's been a change. There's a maturity in him and his team where he's probably learned over the course of things from last season. And right now he's got his team right in the groove. And if they can keep it there, Rob, if they can keep it anywhere near there, they've got to have a chance.
Yeah, and just a little side note for people to watch out for. And of course, Jorginho's back in the side and allowed Rice to play forward in an 8, which I think the manager, Arteta, really likes that. Yeah. Martinelli's position, Rob, it's just something for people out there to 'cause it always used to be, they're kind of learning different tactical kind of themes all the time, but yours with Martinelli wide left, Saka wide right. Martinelli came in a lot more in this game, and that's where the Havertz goal came from. He played a lot more inside. It's just something to watch. I mean, I haven't seen too much of that before. It may be that sometimes Martinelli can be a little quiet. He's out there, he gets the ball, he's up against a good defender, for example, and he plays backwards, and it's a little bit, he gets a little bit nullified in some games. Yeah. It's almost like the manager said to him, you know what, if you feel like you want to roll inside into these little spaces and stuff, I thought he did that well. And that's different. We're always looking for things that's different in what they do. And we've seen that in the last 3 or 4 or 5 games. Mm. But Martinelli's kind of wandering from the left is interesting. interesting because that is different. Yeah. And that run across and pull back for Havertz's goal was a sign of that. So evolving, changing, keeping it interesting for the players, making it difficult for opponents to read what he's going to play. And just final thought, Rob, on him really for Arsenal is that, and I'm always a big believer in this, when things are going really, really well, I hope that the manager and particularly the players just understand what it is, understand what it's been this last 6 weeks or so that's made them crush teams with pressure, with aggression, with some of their football. And when it, if it goes off, if it threatens to go off the rails, just hang on, let's remember back to what it was that got us to this point. Of course, you can't help if injuries affect teams' performance, but I'm sure they'll be learning and understanding, Rob, what can win games well. And my final point is, I've always said, particularly last year, Arsenal won a lot of games in a tight, dramatic manner. They're winning games easily, which is the sign.
The opposition, The XG against, Rob, is incredible, by the way. The XG against, you know, shots conceded is incredible in terms of working with the opposition. So, yeah, good point to make as Arsenal put another four goals. I think, was it 25 goals now in six games since the turn of the year? I mean, incredible return for an Arsenal team that's in pretty good form. Let's move it to... Vitality Stadium, Bournemouth hosting Manchester City. Areola's Bournemouth against Pep's City. Two Spanish coaches, two tacticians, two ways of playing. It wasn't vintage City, but it was important City. Phil Foden with another important goal from midfield and 3 points that closes the gap at the top of the table. Is there any concern that City, the football isn't quite as good, Rob? Is it more about that this is a team that they get the job done and okay, it was a 1-0 win against Brentford, it's a 1-0 win against Bournemouth, it's 6 points and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I think so, Rob. I mean, I think because, you know, for another team, it might be, but because we've got so much blimmin' evidence to go back on and what they've done before is that the main thing for them is that they, when they don't play well, they still win.
Yeah.
And you still got Erling Haaland going through a few times and it's his shot that led to the goal for Phil Foden. Again, Phil Foden's, you know, somebody always seems to step up. And we've seen it before from De Bruyne, or it might be Bernardo Silva, it might be a Julian Alvarez game, you know, and Phil Foden has stepped up his games this year to be an important, not only a footballer and playmaker, but a goal scorer. I've always said that about him, that he's got a natural eye for goal, which always seems to gravitate him towards the penalty box, and he looks to get off, and he gets a tapping goal pretty much. So, yeah, I think there's been a few of those where they haven't been great, but you know that they've got the potential to be great again, and they probably will be great again. So I think, you know, like your first words, Rob, about this, and you look at the league table and it's like tight. It's 2 points. It's Arsenal 58, City 59 and Liverpool 60. I can't be any more excited about what we're seeing. We can eulogise about Arsenal, what we just have, or Liverpool from winning the cup final and of playing great, and Man City not maybe at their best, but they're still right there. It is going to be fascinating. I hope it doesn't come down to blimmin' injuries, Rob, you know, and key players being out, and we don't get the final race that we want from these three great teams at the moment. I just hope that. And Liverpool, of course, is the biggest concern, I guess, with the amount of injuries they've got, though I think a few of them are pretty close. But Man City, Rob, and Man City, and as long as they don't lose their key players, and I know the De Bruyne thing is still a bit of a concern, that he's feeling it a little bit, which is a worry, and they're being very careful with him. Yeah. But for the most part, you know, they're finding ways to do it. And their mentality, their experience tells us that they're going to be there. So, well done, City. Again, and I like Bournemouth. I like what they try and do with the manager.
Yeah, I thought they had a real good go second half, didn't they?
Yeah.
A little bit better in the
box. They got some good players. And I like the way that, I mean, it just shows you that you can be more expansive and we'll get to some of the other games, you know, with Palace's victory or whatever, but you can, with really smart coaching nowadays, you can be more expansive and do okay in this league over the course of 38 games, of course. But just they fell a little bit short, but still pretty blooming good when City, you know, it takes a while for them to find a way to beat you.
I just think with City as well, Rob, you know, often we talk, I said on air, I think it was Zahmed asked me about, you know, the 1-0 win, and I said, in a strange way, they beat Bournemouth 6-1 in the reverse fixture on a great football day when, you know, City do what they do. But sometimes those 1-0 wins are just as important. And one of the things I admire about City is their ability to at times roll the sleeves up. They were up against it a little bit for 15, 20 minutes where Bournemouth had a go and put a few subs on. Semedo was going down one side and Unai had a header down the other. And they scrap almost like they're in a relegation fight. They don't mind doing that as well, Rob. And that's where I think is the difference. There's some teams who don't want to go there. This City team will do what it takes. And I think they deserve a little bit extra credit for that, because we always talk about their football and how it nullifies the opposition and, you know, they pin you back and put you in the vice. But days when the football isn't good, they don't all say, OK, it isn't one of those days. Let's roll the sleeves up and let's do what's required.
No, I think we talked about that, Robert. In, you know, they've made some signings in terms of defenders with Akanji, with Ruben Diaz. They've got Kyle Walker. They've got Nathan Ake. They've got plenty of physicality back there, plus the incredible protection of Rodri. So I think when that needs to be done, Rob, they've now got players, and it ain't always perfect. They've conceded plenty of goals over the last few matches, and for them, which isn't normal, but you always get surprised, Rob. I do anyway, because like. God, you've got so many good defenders back there, but they're so expansive and they throw so many people forward that they are going to get caught, and they have been caught. But no, it's important, Rob, that they have that physicality, and another sign of it in this game against Bournemouth. So that's what they can do. That's why they've won a zillion competitions and the treble last year, and they're going to be right up for it again. It's going to be, it's going to be a fun race to watch.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Okay, let's go to Old Trafford. The Theatre of Dreams, my friend. Jim Ratcliffe's coming out this week in the media and said, you know, he's looking to take Manchester City and Liverpool off the perch in the Sir Alex Ferguson sort of quote from back in the day. There's a lot of talk about, you know, Manchester United's new stadium, the Wembley of the North. There's a lot of talk, you know, about bringing in executives. You've got Omar Berada in. They're looking at Dan Ashworth from Newcastle. So lots of positive off-field talks and moves behind the scenes, Rob. But on the pitch, four straight wins. You know, we're starting to think, is this the consistent run that Manchester United needed? And then we get a performance and a result like we got yesterday. Manchester United 1, Fulham 2.
No, I looked at this game, Rob. I know it was in that window, and you had a different on our air was a different game. But I wanted to watch this. And first off, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, this interview, which I watched the whole thing.
Yeah,
really good. Like really good. Like saying the right things. Not looking backwards, looking forwards. Yeah. Smart approach. Getting best in class. He did say that Champions League football is incredibly important to them, which. This is going to be a blow, mate. If they can't find a way to get into the Champions League, and again, there might be an extra spot in the Premier League. We don't know yet until this season's European competition's kind of come to an end, I think. I don't know the exact details, but it could be five. So there is maybe another spot there, maybe. But playing like this, they got no chance. I mean, it was back to awful. back to awful. And I know that there's injuries and Rasmus Højlund's, the timing of Højlund's injury, Luke Shaw going out the side, Rob, we know Lisandro Martinez was back and then he was out again. The timing of that was not bad. It was awful. You know, it throws Rashford up front again where he looked lethargic, didn't have much of an impact. Amari Forsson is a young kid that got started. You know, Anthony was fit and available. I think he came in the last minute of the game, but is absolutely out of favour right now. And young Forsson started. Now, it's not Forsson's fault. He had very little impact. You know, you start to get to a point, Rob, where there's so many young players out there playing in a situation where the club, the fans, it's not great. It's not easy to play in that. There's a lot of, you know, Maynard was okay, but he looked a little tired, I thought. I thought Fulham found ways to play through the Manchester United midfield all the way through. That was really, really easy. You've got Garnacho that was in and out the game a little bit. I just think there's so much. I mean, when they go behind, Rob, the end, or there's 1-0 down, you know, then there was a moment in the second half where it's like, gung-ho, here we go. And I'm like, here we go. Man United, this is what they prefer. Like, we're losing. Let's throw everything at them. Let's throw Maguire up front. Let's really, nothing to lose. Let's go for it. And they look better. They get to 1-1 and you think, you know, they're probably going to win the game. But that gung-ho nature catches them out. Iwobi goes up the other end and they score and they lose the game. It's been, you know, two steps forward, one back again in this game. And I just, you know, the biggest question is going to be how the new ownership feel about the manager. And that was an awful example of where they're at. You know, and I know there's injuries, but every club's got injuries. But to lose and to get outplayed large periods by Fulham, Rob, was a terrible look. It was a terrible look. Casemiro in midfield, and there's no more respect for what he's done and the medal he's got than me, is just kind of jogs around. He had a few nice little first-time spinners in behind, the first time for forwards, but gets caught out. He doesn't really run back. He hasn't got the energy in there. McTominay came in, I don't know when, at some point in midfield.
Yeah, because Casemiro came off in the challenge, didn't he, with Reed? Remember they had a head challenge and he had to come off, and McTominay came on.
So it was a shocker. It was a shocker. And you know, Erik ten Hag has said, I think he said after the game, I made a note of it, the team, this is based on them coming back from 1-0 down at home against Fulham. He said the team showed big personality and character.
The future looking bright or something, was it? The bigger picture, looking bright. I mean, what we know, Robbie, with this Jim Ratcliffe and this Ineos group is, you said it at the top of the thing, they're talking about excellent, best in class. They're thorough. Yeah.
Correct.
They're experts. They'll look at data. From what you're saying, and again, I didn't see all the games, so I saw a highlight package. I picked up on a couple of reports after. There was an interesting stat that came out, Rob, that said in the last, I think it's five Manchester United games, they've conceded 100 shots at their goal. 17 shots yesterday, Fulham have. Now, that can't be controlling a football match. If Fulham can come away at your ground and have 17 shots. Newcastle didn't have one shot in the first half against Arsenal. And Newcastle are a lot more dangerous team. So, you know, for a group like Ineos, who will be looking at data and looking at all those things, I'm surely they're looking at this and thinking, you know. And I'm now in the position, Rob, where I've got to, I think Ten Hag is a good, honest football man who's doing his best in the circumstances, but I just don't think he's of the ilk that we're talking about Jurgen Klopp and Pep and maybe De Zerbi and Arteta. I just don't think he's of that level. And so I don't want to keep criticising him because I think he's a good, honest football guy, but I just don't think, Rob, he's in that echelon of quality.
Well, and I totally agree, Rob. I totally agree. And given what they've done in going for really good people, from the CEO from Man City, who was almost the head man there, they got him the head man. Dan Ashworth is going to go from Newcastle. Really, really highly respected as a technical director of football. I think it makes absolute sense for, at the end of the season, to thank Erik ten Hag. You know, did he best that he could, but try and get somebody that is close to that that sort of respect of being a really top manager. And again, it's not easy, and I can't throw a name at you right now, thinking that, I agree, and I'd be really surprised if Erik ten Hag stays on, given what they want. They want a clean slate, a fresh sheet of paper. Okay, what do we want here? The director is going to be in place. Everything's kind of going to be in place for them to make and find the right guy. They've got time now between now and the end of the season to put their feelers out, to really kind of... A really interesting thing that Sir Jim Ratcliffe said in the interview, Rob, is that they'll always walk to the right decision and not run to the wrong one.
Yeah,
Take their time to get the right person and not rush to get somebody who's not quite right. So now they've got time to walk to the end of the season to find the right person with the director, with the CEO, to totally change this thing. And I think, you know, again, this isn't reacting off of the one game that was a bad game, but we've all seen the club and this manager work now for a long period of time, and there's been some good work and stuff and some good performances where I'm saying, like, that's better, that's Man United, and that's what we want to see, and don't change this and that. And they've had to do that through injury, but still, it should have been better than that. And to get really kind of played through many, many times by Fulham is an awful look, and one that I don't think we're going to see next year.
And before we move on, mate, I want to go to my underappreciated form of the week. And it's to a club at Fulham that at times, I take the criticism, we don't give enough love to, we don't give enough airtime to. Mm. Obviously, it's not that often that they're the main game, so we don't always get a chance to see them. But I want to point to their manager, mate, Marco Silva. You talk about managers, and I remember sitting down, we sat down with him in the summer series before a ball was kicked, and there was, Mitrovic was going, the Saudi thing was on, he didn't know what was happening, he didn't have money to spend, he was talking himself about whether he was going to leave to go to Saudi. He said to us, Rob, and I remember his words, where we were 2 weeks before the end of the season, he said, we are nowhere near ready, prepared for the start of this season. Yeah. But he had to go with what he went with. Raul Jimenez came into the football club as somebody who could help them. I've always thought, and I still consider Marco Silva to be a very good Premier League manager. I think he's had difficult circumstances. Yeah, I don't think once or twice he's maybe helped himself with some of the decisions or ways he's gone about things. But I just believe, with the right group of people, with the right support, and I'm not talking spending hundreds of millions, but bringing in key players, I still think he's a very, very good manager there, mate. And I don't think he gets enough credit. They're nowhere near the relegation. They go to Manchester United. I mean, yesterday they go to Manchester United, and I know United's tactic was, you know, after Maguire's equalised, the Bassi goal, then let's go for it. But at 1-1, you know, Fulham might have been happy, like, that's a great point away from home. No, he gets Traore on, Traore runs down the side, squares it across to Iwobi, and they get the goal. And I still think Marco Silva has got lots of upside, and is one of those managers who we overlook now. We're looking at all the new ones and people overseas and that. Marco Silva is a very, very capable coach, and Fulham is a football club that doesn't get enough attention.
I like it, mate. I like it because, you know, again, when a manager and a club sit in the middle and they don't get too far towards the European, they don't come too far, it's off our kind of immediate story radar. Mm-hmm. And Fulham have done that. And when you look at their team, I've just got their team up. I mean, it's not a great-looking squad. It's not a great-looking team. He does amazing in some ways, an average set of players. Timothy Castagne was at Leicester City. You know, Anthony Robinson's a good, solid left-back, not a world-beater. Andres Pereira's released from Man United, not deemed to be good enough. Alex Iwobi's jumped around the league a little bit. You know, and Munoz up front, this is the new guy playing up front, where Raul didn't work out very well. Harry Wilson, of course, has jumped around a little bit, former Liverpool guy. I mean, they have... You know, Bernd Leno sort of kicked out of Arsenal. So it is a squad that we could be saying, God, they struggle and they're going to fight relegation. Not been in the picture. Smart manager, good manager, experienced manager now. He's been around English football a long, long time, Marco Silva. Sometimes gets a little fired up and he's a little prickly sometimes in interviews. Yeah. But I think it's a good shout. He's done an excellent job, and we can't study every team and talk thoroughly about every team on the podcast, Rob. We'll be here for days. But I know what you mean, and I apologise to Fulham fans that we don't maybe feature them enough, because there's so many stories to go on in this league that we feel that we have to hit. But so it's a good mention of a good club in a lovely part of London. There's a good place to play, even though the last time I went there, I got elbowed in the face and split my lip right down here. Apart from that, love playing at the Cottage. And they're doing, and the manager's doing a great job. So, yeah, good shout, mate. Good one.
Marco Silva, a bit of love for Marco Silva in Fulham never goes amiss. Mm. Okay, mate, let's move it on to some other results of this weekend. Yeah. I'll pick out my first one. Aston Villa 4, Nottingham Forest 2, a bit of a Midlands derby, two clubs who were former European Cup winners back in the day, mate. But Aston Villa's trajectory seems to be going in the right direction again. Found their form at home. Goals from Ollie Watkins, 14 Premier League goals for him. Douglas Luiz, I know you love him. 8th and 9th Premier League goals for him. And Leon Bailey continues to be a real threat, signed new contract, much happier. But I have to say, Robert, at one point the game was in the balance a little bit, because Forrest got back into things with Niakate getting a 3-1. Gibbs-White, just after half-time, got them back to 3-2. And Alanga missed a really good opportunity, which would have made it 3-3. But Villa went on, got the points. And Unai Emery's team, Rob, now have an 8-point gap between them and Manchester United as they sit in 4th. I mean, all of a sudden, Rob, it's on for them, isn't it? Villa are back in pole position.
It's on. I know they are. I mean, Spurs, you know, they're 5 points. Spurs have got a game in hand, but Spurs are 5 points behind Aston Villa. I think we know that there's been the odd blip for Villa, and there's going to be, of course. Yeah. They're trying to get in the top four. It's not as though they're challenging for the title. There's been a few performances that have been disappointing, but for the most part, they've not had a ton of injuries. They've got a manager that's tried and tested, and he's got a system right down. It's going to be a great race again. Going to be a great race. That Man United result is such a blow for them. Yeah. With that gap there now, and with Spurs that will come again, that was such a, I think, defining game for Man United in terms of that top four race. The only thing that I would say is that extra spot that might come to England in the Premier League possibly, for another spot in the Champions League for next season, that might save Manchester United. But no, it's a good point. And I saw the goals going in. Ollie Watkins taps the ball in. Some of their football, it's really, really good. And Leon Bailey, a player that doesn't always start, I just think I'd love to watch him play. Yeah. If I'm going there at Villa Park, I want to see Leon Bailey play, because I think he's got pace, he's got skill, he does things unexpected, he's in and around the goal. It's another good story, Rob. Let me go on to this, Rob, and I know this may be a little bit out of order what we got here, but Palace, that game, how big was that game for Crystal Palace against Burnley? Yeah. You know, if Palace would have lost that game, then they're pulled right in towards a relegation with a new manager. That is a humongous win for Palace. And Oliver Glasner, the new manager, that seems, Rob, very calm.
Yeah,
again,
like
we'll you know, we see him now, and we'll get to a nice demeanour, change the team a little bit. He's got his attacking players in there. Yeah. He has Mateta and he has Edouard in there, and Jordan Ayew. Yeah. Jordan Ayew, by the way, should get some sort of underappreciated season ticket or some award, because he's underappreciated, but he's an important player for
him.
So I like
team of the year, mate. He's going to be in there. I'm going to find a place for him.
He's going to be in the team of the year.
So I'll tell you what I liked about Glasner, mate. Two things I liked about... Well, he's changed the system a little bit. He likes this 3-4-2 underneath one. The two underneath could be Elise and Eze. And the one, whether it's Mateta or Edward, or he brings someone in, could be exciting. Likes to press. He wants a bit more possession. But I tell you the thing that stood out for me that I've liked about him, and I've seen three interviews, and the first thing he said in all the three interviews was, "My thoughts go to Roy Hodgson. I hope everything's okay with him." And I thought, proper guy, proper guy. Not about him, not about the club, not about there. He mentioned Roy Hodgson on three occasions, and I thought, I like that. It's a good start.
Yeah, it's always good to see for somebody like that to pay good respects to and be humble. Yeah. And even in his interview after the game, Rob, he said, "I've been here like 2 days. You know, this is the players, the staff, and the players that deserve credit here." But he does deserve credit, and it's a great start. And almost now, Robert, Palace at 28 points, I think it was. Yeah,
not far off.
That's a lovely cushion now. That's a lovely cushion. They're not far off. That one blimmin' result was such an important game. So that definitely deserves a mention. And
I'll just give Brighton and Everton a mention, mate, while we finish off. Branthwaite with a goal, 73 minutes on the clock, struggling to score goals. The big centre-half comes up with a big moment. And then they get Gilmore sent off, Rob, Brighton. They're down to 10 men, absolutely throwing things in, kitchen sink. And Lewis Dunk comes up with a massive header. Great point for Brighton, but the 2 points dropped for Everton, Rob, could be killer for Sean Dyche in his team.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, to be so close there, we all know what it means at this time of season to get 3 points. And also, I see that Sean Dyche, it might have been before the game, Rob, I was reading the news and stuff, like, when are we going to find out about our appeal? And, and he's right, Rob.
Yeah. I mean,
what are they
Premier
doing?
League, get on with
why
it.
Is it taking so long?
Yeah.
I mean, and by the way, this is maybe running out of time a little bit, Rob, but there was a debate on the radio that we of course, we listen to the sport radio all the time, and I think they were saying, oh, they shouldn't worry about it. They got 10 points deducted. It's only going to get better for them. It's on the players' minds. And a lot of things I say, you might think is a lot of crap, right? But I've been in this situation. We had 3 points deducted at Middlesbrough, and I promise you, when we were at appeal, we all thought, you know what, we need those points back. You kind of expect to get a boost from it, and when there's an uncertainty, it didn't help us. The result comes, we didn't get them back. We went down by 2 points, so it does affect the players. I don't care what anybody thinks they know about it, and when Sean Dyche said that, it's kind of in he said when players are driving to the ground or something, it's not something that directly affects them, but subconsciously it's in there. Are they going to get some points back? Are we not quite as bad? Do we have to? It does play with
you kind of feel like if the Premier League have gone down this route and have said that they've got to have the time span to get this thing dealt and done with and give Everton a chance. If you're going to take the points and at least give them a chance so we know where we are. The longer you leave it, but you're 100% right. And listen, we await the next week or two that we're hearing that something will be said. But Sean Dyche and his team, disappointed by that, disappointed to lose 2 points. The other game that we had today, mate, not a classic. Wolves won 1-0. Wolves not as the best, Rabiot with a good header. Sheffield United, slightly better performance, conceded 66 goals now in 26 games, worst defensive record ever in the Premier League. Chris Wilder and his team headed to the Championship, and we'll have to see how that all plays out. But that's your lot, mate, for this weekend.
Yeah. No, just last. That's just this Wolves again. Moving up to eighth place in the Premier League is right there. He's right there as manager of the year when we come to the end of the season in terms of Gary O'Neill and what he's done. Yeah. But Wolverhampton Wanderers in eighth spot now, won the last two games. It's like, I know it wasn't a great game today, Rob. I watched it as well, of course. And I just kind of like the way that they're playing and the atmosphere in the stadium, and like they're knocking the ball around, they're spreading it across, they're playing it through. You got Neto. I mean, it's just a good watch. Wolves are a good watch, a good story, a bright young manager that's doing great things, and well done to him. But when I look at the table and see him eighth in the league, right behind Brighton and Manchester United, well done. Like,
there's a sense, wasn't there? Really, do you remember when we did the first game, didn't we? Ball hadn't been kicked. Wolves were at Manchester United and we're at Old Trafford. And surprises how well they played. Yeah. We talked to him after. He'd had 3 days with the players and he got a system. And I remember, Rob, we were talking and thinking, like, wonder if Wolves have just given this, like, hold the fort for a little bit till we find a better manager and whatever. Mm. We didn't even think of him that probably much as a permanent, but, God, what a job he's done. And his reputation has been severely enhanced, Rob, with what he's done at this football club. And I was saying today, it's great for English football, by the way, that we got some young English managers who are showing that they can go toe-to-toe with, you know, your Glasners and your Klopps and your
and the tactical side of things.
And he definitely is one of them. So, well done, Gary O'Neill. Well done, Wolves, eighth place in the table. Right, mate, that's your lot for this weekend when both Arsenal and Man City won at the top of the table. Very different performances for both those teams. Manchester United's good run comes to an abrupt end due to a late Fulham winner. And the first piece of domestic silverware goes to Liverpool after that Virgil van Dijk header. That's one piece of silverware done, three more to go. We'll be back next weekend, Sunday, March the 3rd. That's to review match week 27 and a little matter of the Manchester Derby. Coverage begins 10 a.m. Eastern Time, exclusively live on Peacock. But for now, I'm Earl, he's Musty. Together with the two Robbies, thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.